Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is November the 11th in Trei Asar. We are beginning the last book of Trei Asar, which is Malachi. Malachi has three prakim, it has three chapters. Much of it is familiar to us because the first parak and part of the second parak is a haftorah, and most of the third parak is a haftorah. So of Sefer Malachi, the majority of it are from haftorahs. The end of the Sefer, which is the third parak, which also happens to be the end of Nevi'im, because after this comes Ksuvim. So Nevi'im end with Malachi. The end of it is the Haftorah for Shabbos HaGadol, right before Pesach. So we'll discuss that when we get to that, to the end of Malachi. The beginning of Malachi is the Haftorah of next week's Parsha. Parsha has told us. So this is very appropriate that we're learning it now. Hopefully we'll be aware of it, so that next week we'll be able to understand the Haftorah well. So the first pasuk says, Masa Devar Hashem al Yisrael b'yad Malachi. Masa is one of the words that means a nevuah. There are 10 different words that mean nevuah. Obviously, there is a nuanced difference between which word is chosen to be used. I'm not familiar with each of the nuances, but it is a word for prophecy. So the word of Hashem that to Yisrael in the hands of Malachi. The Gemara wants to know who is Malachi. So there are a few different opinions, but the primary opinion, which is the one that Rashi uses, is that Malachi is Ezra. Ezra, who appears in Ksuvim, in the book of Ezra, that he is Malachi. And Malachi being the last of the Nevi'im, that doesn't mean he was the last Navi to ever live, but it's the last of the Nevi'im to be committed to writing, for posterity. So that he is Ezra. Now, we learned Sefer Ezra, and just to remind you of some of the main points about the person Ezra, Ezra HaSofer, he's called, just so we understand where to place him in our overall appreciation for the various people in Navi. The Gemara tells us that if it wasn't for Moshe Rabbeinu, the Torah would have been given through Ezra. Ezra would have been the next choice after Moshe Rabbeinu to be the one through whom the Torah would be given. The Gemara is not dealing with the time frame, like what would have waited until then. Ezra lives in the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash. That's not the point the Gemara is trying to make. The Gemara is trying to make the point that Ezra is, as far as being qualified to be the one to through whom Hashem gives the Torah, comes in second place after Moshe Rabbeinu. So that's a pretty serious endorsement of Ezra HaSofer. There are several things that Ezra ended up that are his legacy for Klal Yisrael. Ezra HaSofer is the one who gave us the Ksav Ashuris, the block lettering that we use in our Sifrei Torah, where before Ezra, they were not written with Ksav Ashuris, but rather with Ksav Ivris, which is more like our Hebrew script. And that was the writing, which is an acceptable writing, but the block lettering that we use is a better writing, because there are more embedded messages in the block lettering than in any other lettering. So Ezra gave that to us. It's not that he invented it. It was given at Har Sinai, but it was not meant to be used in a widespread way until Ezra came along, and in his day, he made it that which would be used widespread. Ezra HaSofer also is responsible, of course, for the construction of the second Beis HaMikdash. He's the one who led the Jews back from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael to build the second Beis HaMikdash. Ezra is a Kohen, although he was not the Kohen Gadol. Yehoshua was the Kohen Gadol of the time, but which is, of course, a different Yehoshua than the Yehoshua of is the student of Moshe Rabbeinu. This is much later than that. But Ezra was a Kohen, and he was and he spearheaded the building of the second Beis HaMikdash. Ezra HaSofer also, before taking Jews from Babel back to Eretz Yisrael, he was responsible for reestablishing proper Jewish yichus, lineage. Because in the 70 years of Galus in Babel, one of the things that kind of fell apart was Jews being careful with who marries whom and knowing who comes from whom. That sort of thing got a little bit murky in Babel. And Ezra made it his job to get clear who goes with whom and to make the Yichus work well. And when he took us back to Eretz Yisrael, what he did is anybody whose Yichus was suspect, meaning you didn't know where they came from exactly or who somebody was or whether somebody was this, that, or the other thing, he made categories for each group. He made 10 different categories. And everybody he left behind in Bavel, he only left behind people whose yichus was unquestioned. But anybody that there was any kind of suffix, any kind of doubt, he made sure he forced them to come with him to Eretz Yisrael. As you know, when we went back to Eretz Yisrael for the second Beis HaMikdash, most people didn't want to come. They stayed in Bavel. But Ezra forced anybody whose yichus had any kind of a suffix, any kind of a doubt, to come with him to Eretz Yisrael, because that way the court system, which would be set up in Eretz Yisrael, could keep an eye on them, so that they would not end up mixing back in with the Jewish people and creating more doubt. So Ezra also took care of that. That's one of the other things he did. Ezra was also the Gadol Hador. He was the greatest Talmud Chacham of his generation. In fact, the Gemara tells us that you'll recall that the second Beis HaMikdash, the foundation was laid 18 years prior to its actual construction. It was, the Jews went up to rebuild it under the reign of Koresh. That, they laid the foundation and then the building was stopped, due to anti-Semitism. And then you have the whole Purim story, and 18 years later, they go back and finally finish the job. Ezra didn't go the first time, he only went the second time. The Gemara tells us the reason he didn't go the first time is because his Rebbe, Baruch ben Neria, was still alive and was too old to travel. And so Ezra did not want to leave his Rebbe because he needed to learn Torah. So he did not leave his Rebbe, Baruch ben Neria. Ezra is the primary disciple of Baruch ben Neria, who is in turn the primary disciple of Yirmiyahu HaNavi. So Ezra continues that legacy from Yirmiyahu to his Rebbe Baruch ben Neria to himself, and he was the Gadol Hador. He was the greatest Torah sage of his generation. So that's just a little bit of a snapshot of the person we're talking about. Assuming Malachi is Ezra, that's the person we're dealing with. He worked closely with Nehemiah. That's why the book is sometimes called Ezra Nehemiah, even though it's really the book of Ezra. But he worked closely with Nehemiah. Nehemiah, as I've mentioned to you before, is also the name of his other name is Zerubbabel, and Nehemiah is the heir to the throne. He's from Yehuda, and if there would have been royalty in the second Beis HaMikdash, Nehemiah would have been the melech. He would have been the king. So Ezra worked closely with Nehemiah, and that's all described in the Sefer of Ezra / Nehemiah. So here, though, we have a nevuah from Malachi, who we say is Ezra. Now you will see that the nevuah of Malachi is about the Kohanim. It's about the Kohanim and about how they behave in the Beis HaMikdash. Since Ezra is himself a Kohen, And since Ezra rebuilt the second Beis HaMikdash, he built the second Beis HaMikdash, so it is appropriate that a Nevuah that is coming to be critical of and to encourage better behavior from the Kohanim is going to be through Ezra. And therefore, that's the main topic of his Nevuah. Pasuk Beis, verse 2. Ahavti eschem amar Hashem. I have loved you, says Hashem. Va'amartem, and you say, Bama ahavtanu, how have you loved us? Where do we see that you loved us? Now at this point, he's not talking only to the Kohanim, he's talking to all of Yisrael, as it says in the first Pasuk, El Yisrael. We'll see, he's going to pinpoint the Kohanim soon. So Hashem says, I've loved you, and the Jews say, where do we see you loved us? And Hashem responds, Halo ach Esav liYaakov ne'um Hashem. Esav was a brother to Yaakov, says Hashem. Va'ohaves Yaakov. And I loved Yaakov. I made it clear that I loved Yaakov over Esav. Because Esav's behavior and Yaakov's behavior, I loved Yaakov over Esav. Ves Esav son Esi. And Esav I despised. Va'asim es harav shimama. And I made his mountains desolate. Ves nachalaso. And his inheritance, lisanos midbar, for a place of the wilderness, meaning a place where snakes and creatures would roam. That's what I did to his inheritance. This is why this is read in next week's Haftorah, because next week is Parshas Toldos, and Parshas Toldos is the birth of Yaakov and Esav. So that's why this is the Haftorah for Parshas Toldos. Pasuk Daled, verse 4. Ki somar Edom rushashnu. When Edom says, we have been impoverished. V'nashuv v'nivneh charavos. So we will go back and we will rebuild. We'll build our cities that have been destroyed. If Edom will say that we want to rebuild. Ko amar Hashem tzvakos, so says Hashem. Hema yivnu, they will build v'ani aheros, and I will destroy. V'karu lahem gavul risha, they will be called the boundary of evil. V'ha'am asher za'am Hashem ad olam, and the nation that Hashem has, another word for despised, has been angry with forever. Hashem does not does not consider highly Esav. V'einechem tirena, your eyes will see. V'atem tomru, and you will say, when you see this happen, Yigdal Hashem, Hashem should be elevated, me'al ligvul Yisrael, from upon the boundary of the Jewish people. Meaning that through us Jews, through Hashem's love for us Jews, Hashem's name should be elevated and he should be well known throughout the world. So far, it's essentially an introduction that Hashem is saying that I have loved the Jews, and the Jews question, where do we see that you love us? And Hashem makes the case. Look at Esav, look at Yaakov, look at how Esav tries to rebuild and I destroy, and that I am exalted over the name of, over the boundaries of Yisrael. So now we get to more of the critical part. Pasuk Vav, verse 6. Bein Yechaved Av Ve'Eved Adonav. It is natural that a son will honor his father and a slave his master. Vim av ani, and if I am a father, meaning to you Jews, ayech vodi, where is my honor? Vim adonim ani, and if I am a master, ayeh mora'i, where is your fear of me? Amar Hashem tzvokos, says Hashem. Lachem hakohanim bozei shemi. I am speaking to you, the Kohanim, you who degrade my name. V'amartem, and you say, Pemevazinu es shemecha. How did we degrade your name? You ask, you deny, and you say that, what do you mean? What have we done to degrade your name? So you see the formula here is very similar to what we had before. Before, the Hashem says, I have loved you, and you say to me, where do we see you love us? And here we have a very similar exchange. Hashem says, you have degraded my name, and you say, where have we degraded your name? So he's now going to show where it is that the Kohanim have degraded Hashem's name. Before I read on with that, the Medrash here tells us on Pasuk Vav, verse 6, Bein Yechaved Av, Ve'Eved Adonav, the Gemara says that we have examples from the non-Jews where it is natural that a son will honor his father and a slave will have fear of his master. And the Medrash gives examples based on Babel, the Babylonians, when they destroyed the first Beis HaMikdash. Where do we find that a son honors his father? So the king that preceded Nebuchadnezzar as king of Babel, I don't know if it was the immediate preceding king or perhaps two before, but one of the ones right before Nebuchadnezzar took power was Biladon ben Biladon Merodach. His name was Biladon, the son of Biladon Merodach. So that's a funny thing. I mean, why would the son and father have the same name? And if they do have the same name, then why does the son only have one of the two names? Right? You have people have the same names. But here, it's Biladon, then Biladon Merodach. So it's a funny thing. So the father's name was Merodach. What happened is, the father became unable to serve. He was unable to act as king. He became ill and was unable to act as king during his reign. And his son became the acting king. But because he wanted to honor his father, he therefore, even though he was now the acting king, he did everything in his father's name. So therefore, he wrote in, whenever he signed anything or had a proclamation made, instead of saying, this comes from Biladon ben Merodach, because which is the regular way you would say it, so-and-so, the son of so-and-so, that was the typical way you'd say it, he attached his name to his father's name. It's Biladon, the son of Biladon Merodach, meaning that the son of Biladon, who is acting as Merodach, what he did is he attached it to show that he was really only acting as his father. And if he would have just said Biladon ben Merodach, that wouldn't have shown anything because that's just the regular way that, ben Merodach is like a last name. So he added his name to his father's name to show that he was only acting on behalf of his father. There you see ben Mechabed Av, that the son honored the father. Where do we see Ve'eved Adonav, that the slave fears his master? So we know that Nebuchadnezzar's chief warrior was Nebuzradon. Nebuzradon was the Rav Tabachim, chief butcher, really, of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuzradon, it tells us that there's different psukim. One pasuk implies that Nebuzradon, when he went to conquer Yerushalayim, that Nebuchadnezzar was with him. But that pasuk is contradicted because there's another pasuk that says that Nebuchadnezzar was elsewhere at that time. So the Gemara tells us Nebuchadnezzar was not there. It was Nebuzradon that did it. However, he had on his chariot, he had etched into his chariot the face of Nebuchadnezzar so that he would constantly have the fear of his master, Nebuchadnezzar. Meaning he did that. He wanted that face etched into his chariot so that he would be perpetually in fear of his master, Nebuchadnezzar. And that is Ve'ever Adonav, that the slave fears his master. So Hashem says, you find amongst the non-Jews that the son voluntarily showed honor to his father, and the slave voluntarily created a fear of his master, made sure to have that. So, but in your case, says Hashem, if I'm the father, where's my honor? If I'm the master, where's the fear of me? I don't see that you are doing this. Pasuk Zion. So Hashem is now going to explain, where do we see that the Kohanim were not acting, were degrading the name of Hashem? Magishim al mizbechi lechem migo'ol. You offer on my altar bread that is migo'ol. Migo'ol would mean that which nobody wants.
Here it's translated as polluted.
Polluted, okay. Polluted bread, whatever that means. But bread that nobody would want to have. V'amartem, and you say, v'ame ge'alnucha. In what way is it that it's polluted? In other words, why wouldn't you want this bread? Now, when it says bread, it doesn't have to mean actual bread. Bread in Tanakh always means the food, whatever the food is. So the food of the Mizbeach is usually animals. So you say back to me, in what way have we offered, we'll call it polluted bread? So the response is, first of all, Be'emarachem, when you say, Shulchan Hashem nivzehu, the table of Hashem is denigrated, is something that is lowly, something we don't want. So Chazal explained that karbanos are often shared by many kohanim. When that happens, a kohen only gets a very small amount of food from the carbon. So Hashem is saying that the Kohanim were treating that little bit of carbon as being unimportant. As they were saying, if I'm not going to get a whole steak out of this, so why bother? So Hashem says that in that way, you're degrading my name, and your offerings of karbanos are, we'll call it, polluted offerings, because you're not treating them with respect. But furthermore, Pasuk Ches, verse 8, V'chi sagishun iver lizboach ein ra. When you bring a blind animal as a sacrifice, you say, it's not bad, it's okay. V'chi sagishu piseach v'chola ein ra. And when you bring forth a lame animal or a sick animal, you say, ain't raw, it's not a big deal, it's not evil, it's okay. So you are offering animals as karbanos that are compromised. And we know the rule is that an animal for a karban has to be without a mum. It has to be without a blemish. Hakrivehu na lefecha secha. Bring them now to your leader. Lefecha secha means to the one who has authority over you. Meaning, if you're saying it's not a big deal to offer a carbon like that, so then bring that to your flesh and blood leader. Hayirtzecha, will he be pleased with you? O hayisaf anecha, or will he lift your face, which means will he show favor to you? Amar Hashem Tzvakos, says Hashem Tzvakos. So Hashem says the Kohanim were willing to bring karbanos that were less than perfect. And the Hashem says, you wouldn't do that with a flesh and blood king, so why is it okay to do it in the Beis HaMikdash? When I was growing up, there was a person in shul, so we're going back a lot of years ago, so in those days, I think people were more careful with how formally they dressed in Shul, and people did dress formally. Also, this was up north, so it was a colder climate. So there was a person who came to Shul, and it was striking to me because he was in his shirt sleeves and no tie, and you know, and a couple of buttons open on his shirt. You know, it was a button-down shirt, but it was like, you know, very
open here.
Yeah, very casual, very casual. So, as a kid, I was a kid, right? I don't remember exactly how old I was, but you know, I said something to him, as sometimes kids do, like, you know, like, why are you dressed like that? So he said to me, because it's very uncomfortable for him to, he said, it's uncomfortable for me to button all the buttons and have a jacket and a tie. It's uncomfortable that it's hard for me to do that. So, the man was an attorney. So, as a kid, I offhandedly said to my father that, you know, I saw, you know, so-and-so, and I said to him, like, why? And he said, because it's hard for him to you know, have the jacket and the whole thing. So my father said to me, what you should ask him, how does he dress when he goes to court?
Yeah.
Right? Right. Right. So, you know, that's what Hashem is saying over here, so to speak. Right?
But you didn't say it by yourself.
I was a kid. What I know.
You got that far.
I may have gone back and said it. Yeah. I don't remember. But anyway, so Hashem is saying that you wouldn't bring animals like this or gifts like this to your flesh and blood leader. So how do you offer it on the Mizbeach? Now, this phrase, Hakrivehu na lefecha secha, which is rhetorical, is take it to your flesh and blood leader. Doesn't mean to actually do that. It means, would you actually do that? But that, it's being said rhetorically. So this phrase is quoted in the Gemara many, many times. Whenever the Gemara is talking about something which is technically okay, meaning it fits the basic parameters for the mitzvah or for the offering or for whatever it is, but you wouldn't do that with a flesh and blood leader. And the Gemara says, therefore, you shouldn't do that with Hashem. Now, the Gemara is talking primarily about Beis HaMikdash things, like wine that is technically okay to be used for nesachim, for the libations, but it's got a little bit of a bad smell, it's starting to turn, so it technically meets the requirements for the Mizbeach, but you wouldn't offer that if you to a flesh and blood king. Now, if that's all there is, it's one thing, but if you can get a hold of better wine, you wouldn't do that. So it's the kind of thing where I'm saying, yeah, it's technically okay, but it's not a good move to offer that. Same thing with an animal that is, like in this case, where an animal is technically okay, it doesn't have a blemish, it's really all right, but it's scrawny, it's not the kind of gift you would give to a flesh and blood king. And the Gemara uses, as I said, many, many times for that, for those examples of things. So, even though the Gemara is talking primarily about the Beis HaMikdash when it cites this pasuk, but we understand that that's a standard that is worthwhile for a person to think about with their service of Hashem. And a person, sometimes we say, you know, well, you know, this is acceptable. It's okay. And, you know, why should I go the extra mile? Why should I go beyond, you know, this is fine. And the answer is yes, it is fine. But what would you do if you were trying to curry favor with a king, with a judge, with a, you know, you'd go beyond, right? And so, So that's true for our service of Hashem as well, that we should go beyond. Now, the Gemara also uses this pasuk for the statement. It's mentioned in Maseches Sukkah, really. That's where the discussion is. But it applies in many places for the concept of mitzvah haba'a ba'avera. Mitzvah haba'a ba'avera means a mitzvah that comes forth from an avera. What's the classic case of a mitzvah haba'a ba'avera? That would be that a person needs to do a mitzvah, and the way that they accomplish it, they need to do a mitzvah, the way they accomplish it is through an avera. So for example, let's say one needs a particular item to do a mitzvah, and they don't have it, so they steal the item, right? So you say, the theft Hashem doesn't want, but He wants the mitzvah. So a mitzvah that comes about through a theft, that's not going to be what Hashem is looking for. That's a mitzvah haba ba'avera. Now there are technical parameters for the phrase mitzvah haba ba'avera, because if it actually fits the real technical definition of mitzvah haba ba'avera, then one's mitzvah doesn't even count. It wouldn't count at all. Not that it's a compromised mitzvah, but it wouldn't even count. But we, for our purposes, we don't need to get into the actual technical details of what constitutes a real mitzvah haba ba'avera, but conceptually, the idea that one arrives at a mitzvah through doing an avera, that obviously compromises the mitzvah. Even if one technically might get reward for the mitzvah, it's going to be compromised. So this examples of this abound. When one is trying to do a mitzvah like coming to shul or something like that, or davening, and they do so by, you know, pushing past somebody else, you know, that kind of thing. So they're not being nice to another person or being disrespectful to another person in order to get in a mitzvah. So it may not be technically mitzvah, blah, 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 but conceptually it's that idea, or the other way around, where a person is so intent on doing something for somebody else that they ignore their responsibility of a mitzvah that they're supposed to be doing. So a person says that, you know, I want to do this mitzvah for somebody else, so they skip davening in order to do this, you know, where they could have done both, but someone will give up on a mitzvah in order to do a different mitzvah or something like that. Sometimes that's warranted, but many times we know that we kind of overemphasize one over the other, and we compromise whatever it is that we're trying to get done. So that's conceptually the idea of mitzvah haba'a ba'avera, which is derived from here, from this pasuk about bringing a compromised carbon, and would you do that with a flesh and blood king, etc. So it's also learned from here. The case in the Gemara is stealing a lulav and esrog.
Stealing what?
A lulav and esrog.
That's what I had in my mind when you said steal
something. Yeah. Stealing a lulav and esrog, and then offering, and then using that for the mitzvah. Right. So that would be the case over there. Okay. Pasuk Tes verse 9. Ve'ata now, chalu nafnei kel v'chanenu. Now, you kohanim, you are supplicating the face of Hashem that He should show graciousness to you. That's what you're doing. But the problem is, the way you're behaving, your davening is compromised. Mi'enchem ha'isazos. From your hands, all of the above has come, meaning you've not treated the karbanos properly. Ha'yisam ikem panim. Is Hashem going to lift your face? Meaning, is He going to pay attention to your davening? Amar Hashem tzvokos, says Hashem. Hashem is not going to be pleased with your davening if it's going to come at the expense of the way that you are treating the karbanos. Mi gam bachem v'yisgor delasayim. Who among you will close the doors? v'lo sa'iru mizbechi, and will not light up my mizbeach chinam for free, which means that that you're not interested in even doing some of the easier jobs of the Beis HaMikdash. You don't want to open the doors. You don't want to put a light on the Mizbeach, a fire on the Mizbeach. Ein li chefetz b'chem, I don't have interest in you. Amar Hashem Tzvakos, says Hashem. U'mincha lo ertzem yedchem, and therefore a gift I will not accept from your hands. The Medrash says that when you have little favors, people tend to do little favors for free. If someone is carrying something and you're near the door and they say to you, would you get the door, please? So you open the door for them, right? It would take a lot of chutzpah for a person to say, how much would you pay me? Right? Right? For little things, we don't do that. We do little things we do for each other, right? So but here the Kohanim wanted some sort of payment for every little job in the Beis HaMikdash. So Hashem says, even for opening a door, even for putting a light on the Mizbeach, even for that, no one wants to do it chinam, no one wants to do it for free. You want to get paid for all of even the little things in the Mizbeach. Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11. Ki mi mizrach shemesh v'ad mevo'o, because from the time the sun comes up until it sets, gadol shemi b'goyim, my name is great amongst the nations, uv'chol makom, and in all places, muktar mugash lishmi u'mincha tahora. There is muktar, which means to burn karbonos, and mugash, brought close, lishmi, in my name, u'mincha tahora, and a pure offering. Now, it's all over the world, pure offerings are done for my name. Ki gadol shemi b'goyim, because my name is great amongst the nations, amar Hashem Tzvakos, says Hashem. Now, the Gemara wants to know, what does this mean? Where do we see amongst the nations of the world that they offer karbanos to Hashem and his name is great? And it's not true. They worship Avodah Zarah. Where do we see that, what this pasuk is saying? So the Gemara says, I'll read you the language of the Gemara, dekarule elaka delahaya. They call Hashem the God of the gods. So they're making a mistake because they're attributing authority to more than one God. However, they do refer to Hashem as the chief God. So even though they are mistaken, they are misled, they are doing something wrong in their belief in other gods, however, they are at least acknowledging Hashem's supremacy over everything. That at least they're acknowledging. So Hashem says, if you look around the world, you're going to get that, you're going to get at least that. But Pasuk Yud Beis, Ve'atem Mechalalem Oso, but you are profaning the name of Hashem. Be'amarchem, when you say, Shulchan Hashem Megol, who Hashem's table is, using the same word polluted, V'nivo Nivze Achlo. And it's degrading,
contemptible.
The food of his mizbeach, to eat the food from the mizbeach. So you're, in contrast to the rest of the world, this is the way that you are thinking about my name and my karbonos. Va'amartem, and you say, hinei matla'a v'pachtem oso, and you say, here is matla'a. Matla'a means like a scrawny animal. V'pachtem oso, and you, how do they translate v'pachtem? And you disrespect? Is that the way they?
You have snuffed at it.
Okay.
You were snuffed.
Like disrespect. and you've disrespected it. Now, Chazal tell us that this word oso, the intention is osi. You've disrespected me. But since that's not a nice thing to say, so the Hashem had the Navi write it differently as a euphemism. And you disrespected it, meaning the animal. But really, the intention is disrespecting Hashem. Amar Hashem Tzvakos, says Hashem, Ba'aveisem gozul ves hapiseach ves hachole. You've brought a stolen animal, a limping animal, a lame animal, and a sick animal. Ve'aveisem es haminchan, you bring the gift, the offering. Ha'er etzeh usam yedchem, would I want it from your hands? Amar Hashem, says Hashem. This is actually the pasuk where mitzvah haba'a ba'avera is derived, because it says you brought the stolen animal. This is the pasuk that's the other one that I mentioned. That pasuk is also cited, but this is the main pasuk for mitzvah haba'a ba'avera, mitzvah that comes through in aver. So Hashem says you bring these scrawny animals, stolen animals, lame animals, sick animals. V'arur nochel, and cursed is the one who acts in a deceitful manner. V'yesh be'edro zachar, and he has in his flock a proper, healthy ram. V'noder v'zoveach mashchas l'Hashem, and instead he offers, he takes an oath and he brings something which is not a nice offering to Hashem. Ki melech gadol ani, for I am a great king. In other words, I'm no less than a great king. Hashem says, at least you should treat me like you would a regular king. Amar Hashem Tzvakos, says Hashem, Ushmino Rav Agoyim, and my name is great amongst the nations. Okay. The criticism is really ending there. And in Perek Beis, it will start to talk about what they should do rather than what they're not doing or what they're doing wrong. But there are a couple of points that they're important to make before moving further at all. First of all, in Pasuk Yud Aleph, when it says, in verse 11, where it says that Hashem's name is great amongst the nations, and everywhere there's offerings being made to him. So we said before, that means that they call him the God of all gods. But the Gemara says that here there's another reference being made. And that is that this is talking about Talmidei Chachamim, the Torah sages, the Torah scholars. In that, when they study the laws of karbanos, then it is as if a karban is being offered. And that's what it means over here, that in all over the world, everywhere, karbanos are being offered to Hashem. We asked, it's not true. Karbanos are not being offered to Hashem, they're being offered to pagans. So we answered that the non-Jews do refer to Hashem as the chief God. But the other way to understand this is, all over the world, everywhere where there is a Talmud Chacham who is studying the laws of Karbanos, it is as if a Karban is being offered in that place. And this is an important rule when it comes to the study of Torah, and in general, that which we can't do. The pasuk says, "Unishama farim sfasenu," that our mouths will be in place of the bulls that we would have offered. And Chazal derived from there, when a person recites the karbanos, but not just says the words, but thinks about the words, especially if they study the words, then it is like a karban is being offered. So this is One of the important rules when it comes to Torah study, and that is that the Torah was given as a complete Torah with 613 mitzvos. It is impossible for any one person to perform all 613 mitzvos. And even more so, today we are very limited in how many mitzvos we can actually perform. We're not in Eretz Yisrael, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, we don't have a king, there's so many things we don't have and are unable to do many, many of the mitzvos in the Torah. But when they are studied, it's like they are being performed. And that is true whether it's a group doing the studying or an individual doing the studying, but that is, it is like it is being done. So here, the Pasuk means that everywhere where there is a Talmud Chacham studying the laws of Karbanos, it's like the Karbanos are being offered. And Hashem is saying to the Kohanim, all over the world, there are people who are respecting my Karbanos, my service. They're studying it in depth. Why would they be studying it in depth if it didn't matter, if it was unimportant? Clearly it is important. And you, Kohanim, you're not treating this with the proper respect. When people study Torah, so we know that it's a gigantic mitzvah, and we know that it provides for everyone around those who study Torah, that it provides many, many benefits. We know that the energy for mitzvos, for an entire community, is the engine, is in the Beis Medrash. It's where the Torah study is going on. That's what fuels everything else. We also know that Shmira, that protection comes, physical protection, besides spiritual protection, comes from the study of Torah. We know that. But there is also a certain subtlety that when people are dedicating time to the study of Torah, then they are projecting that this is important, that what we are studying is important, even if it isn't being performed, but it's clearly important because otherwise we wouldn't be studying it. I once asked my Rebbe, Rabbi Tzvi Berkowitz in Baltimore, I once asked him that what is gained this is when I was living in Columbus, Ohio. So I asked him, what is gained by us studying in the Beis Medrash, in the Kollel in Columbus, that how is that affecting the community at large? I understand that on a certain level, there's a spiritual energy, but more than that, is there anything more direct than that? So he told me that when someone drives by, the Kollel in Columbus is located on a storefront. It's a strip of stores, and it's in one of the storefronts. So when somebody drives by, and someone who never studies Torah drives by, and that person is aware that there are intelligent people in that building who are dedicating their time to studying Torah. So the person may not think about it consciously, but the message that the person is getting is that the study of Torah is important, because otherwise they wouldn't be spending their time doing it. So there is a subtlety in that study of Torah that is going on, besides the fact that really there is energy and protection that comes from it, but there's also a projected importance, which is important. So when even if the mitzvahs aren't able to be performed, but if they're being studied, that projects their importance. Now the other point we have to make is the following. The Kohanim weren't that bad. They were not that bad. We're not talking about people who were evil, who were doing terrible averos. We are talking about Kohanim in the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, who were excited to have a Beis HaMikdash. They hadn't had one in 70 years. This was an exciting time. Imagine if the Beis HaMikdash would be built today, we'd all be excited, but the Kohanim would be the most excited. They'd be in the Beis HaMikdash and they'd be performing the service that hasn't been done in so many years. It would be an incredible thing. These Kohanim were no less excited and faithful to the Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash. The criticism that's going on here is on their level. On the level they were on, the expectation was that they put more effort into what they were doing and to be more careful with the karbanos, more careful with the quality of the karbanos, more careful with the importance that they attributed to eating the karbanos. These subtleties, we're not talking about Kohanim who were actually bringing stolen animals and lame animals, but the Kohanim weren't putting in as much effort as they could have to make sure the animals were of the highest quality, to make sure to get even the smallest morsel of the karban to be able to eat that as a schus, as a merit. On their madrig, on their level, they are being criticized. We will see that borne out as we move along in Malachi. We'll see that the Kohanim are on a higher level than is implied over here. But as you know, we've seen this many times throughout Tanakh, that the bigger people are criticized in a way that it's a very strong criticism for their level. It's a strong criticism comparatively to people who are at a lower level if they would actually be doing what is being described over here. So we'll see that as we move along that the Kohanim are on a higher level than it appears from the way it's expressed here in the first parak.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.